comedy gay.
A queer exploration of Pretty Little Liars.
With your hosts, Speak Pirate, aka Joanna. I'm here, I'm queer, and I have a cat named Spencer.
And your other host, LCO123, aka Vina, a proud member of the Church of Vander Jesus.
Welcome this week to Hold Your Peace, an episode that has to be better than last week's, right? So we hope. This episode is notable for some of the people who are not in it. Allison, Mona, Veronica, Paige, Presra, Holden, Jenna, Mary Drake. We get brief appearances from Yvonne and Nicole, and we get to see Sydney namaste, bitch. But watching this episode, it feels like the show has no emotional investment in itself. Like, why should the audience care other than we've spent years at this point caring? All of the squad interactions are limited to brief scenes at the start and the finish. The pacing is super bad. But Hannah gets an atrocious-looking Hannikin, then is forced to wear a dress. Caleb gets gassed. Aria again learns to electronically stalk people in a single morning, which unfortunately goes nowhere except on a very boring stakeout. And Spencer is exiled for most of this episode to a community center date with a man.
Yeah, this episode is like, it feels like the subtext of every scene is just like, don't worry about it. Like, there is so little care at this point. And I'm really feeling that thing that we've been talking about of like, the frustration of you guys have so few episodes left to wrap up this whole big story that we've spent 7 years invested in. And like, we're wasting time with this crap, with ping pong, with Caleb getting gassed, with a, you know, walk to remember style wedding. Like, really?
Well, also, all of that stuff, like, all of that stuff happens like in the last maybe 10 minutes of the episode. So yeah. Caleb getting gassed, which is like not a terribly exciting thing to have happen, but is nonetheless one of the more exciting things that happens in this episode. It doesn't happen till the very end. Yvonne having her like highway to heaven death scene, like, where do we want to go on our honeymoon? Do we want to go to Antwerp or Moscow or like, you know, that doesn't happen until the very end. So like the whole episode is just sort of like spinning its wheels until we get to like the small non-events that then like make up the ending of it.
And as we have been talking about, it's not like they're just out of mysteries. Like, there are plenty of things that they could be focusing on. But for whatever reason, they're like, no, let's put Hannah in a dress. Let's do this and that. And it's interesting, too, because it feels like the game, meaning like the board game, Liar's Lament, which, first of all, continuously, like, now the episode titles are like the most clever part of any of it. Like, I was like, oh, hold your peace. That's actually kind of a clever episode title for this episode. But it's like that. I think that they are trying to do a thing where it's like, oh, the game is impacting the liars' futures, you know, and it's impacting their dreams and that sort of thing. And so it's less connected to what they've already done in the past and more connected to how this is going to impact them in their futures, which is kind of an interesting idea. But first of all, like, everything is so scattershot, and also, you know, like having the focus be on like Emily's job at the school and Hannah's fashion design company. Like, it's both of those are elements of the plot that have been so just like thrown in here at the last minute that it's kind of hard to get super invested when it's like, you know, Lucas is coming in and talking nebulously about the investors, and it's like he shows up and you're like, oh, right, Lucas is part of this.
And like, previously Lucas was like this billionaire tech genius, so it's very unclear why I thought he was just bankrolling Hannah. It's really unclear why we need other investors. Like, does Lucas not have enough money? Like, are these investors just people who are on his board? Like, so there are like these nebulous forces of like the investors who are like an unseen force that's driving that part of the plot, And then Marco is going to have a line in this episode about how the brass are like off the case. Okay, we have like never seen a Rosewood police officer who is higher ranking than Marco. We have never seen anyone who gives Marco orders. Marco like directs what everyone is doing. So the idea that like, oh, but no, there are like these bosses that are just breathing down his neck, the brass, that it's just like, okay, show. Okay.
It's very strange. It's very strange for sure. And it's also like the other thing is like with the fashion design thing, like Mona should be intricately involved in this. And like sort of it seemed like the implication is that like this is now Mona and Hannah's company, but Mona's nowhere near this.
You know, it almost felt to me like this episode was maybe like out of sequence, potentially, like maybe they kind of spliced it together later on, because for one thing, the pacing is so bad. Like the pacing, the scenes don't fit into each other really in any coherent way. But also a lot of this episode, like a lot of the sort of like, I don't even want to call it momentum because it's not really momentum, but like a lot of the idea of it, I guess, is they're trying to find Jenna. And so they are, you know, trying to like get Sydney to lead them to Jenna. Mm-hmm. But like they were trying to find Jenna before and they found Jenna in the last episode. So if Jenna is just like whack-a-mole, like here Jenna is, we found her. Oh, now we lost Jenna again. Where could Jenna be? Like that element of it is just like, it's very tiring. Like you just had Jenna last episode. Mona interacted with her. Hannah interacted with her. Caleb interacted with her. Spencer interacted with her. Like, but now this week it's like, oh, if we can just find Jenna, that'll crack the whole thing wide open.
Well, and not only is it tiring in terms of last week, it's tiring in terms of the fact that like, there have been like 17 we gotta find Jenna plots over the course of the series at this point. We gotta use her like vaguely gay minion to try to find Jenna. Like that has happened so many times with so many gay minions. Like it is just like, it is so boring. Like I feel like you could, you know, like if you had like all of the scripts of PLL in like one giant document, if you could like control F, find Jenna, you'd get like 1,000 results.
Well, also, oh man, we're like really just going hard on this episode before we've even gotten into it. But like, the other thing about like the episode and how it feels is like in the last episode, it was all of this like junked up, oh, maybe it's Addison. Maybe Addison is AD. Ooh. And so like we spent all this energy on Addison and now it's like a new week. So Addison is not here. Thank goodness. But like, she's not here. We don't care about that anymore. Paige isn't here. We don't care about that anymore. Now we just care about, oh, we're going to find Sydney and she's going to make us find Jenna. Like, Mary Drake could still be a very viable suspect, but that's hand-waved away until, I guess, next week when I think Mary Drake is actually going to be back in the plot. So it's just really, like, ever more apparent that we're just doing, like, red herring suspect of the week at this point.
It feels like they're really like exquisite corpsing the scripts at this point. And it's also like to your point that you've been kind of talking about like the vibes, like it feels like they just kind of decided like, or like Spencer really decided, she was like, I don't know, Mary Drake's vibe, like I kind of like it. So like, I don't think she's bad anymore. And everybody's just kind of like, okay, that tracks. It's fine. We'll go by vibes. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
One thing that I want to note about this episode is that, one thing that made watching this episode slightly more entertaining for me is that I watched it with my girlfriend Kelsey. And so throughout this episode, I will have her little hot takes as somebody who's like seen some of the early seasons and not seen much of the later seasons. So hopefully her commentary will make this episode halfway listenable.
I'm really excited about that because you and I have been doing this for a really long time to the point that we often have the same things in our notes. So yeah. I'm really excited for like another perspective, the hot take corner.
The hot take corner, Kelsey's corner, if you will. Okay. Yeah. Great. Yeah.
right. Like coding with Carly, the, you know, the,
yeah.
Got it.
It's 10 minutes in and you've already managed to bring up Karlie Kloss. That's about right.
I feel like I'm doing great.
Yeah.
All right. So even the previous Lees are banana crackers and all over the place this week. A true whirl of nonsense to just start us off. We open on Spencer, who is trying to sleep and having the game's cell phone continually wake her up with crying baby noise. Spencer thinks the game is taunting her for being a, quote, Dickensian foundling, who, I will again point out, was raised by her biological father. She has stuck the phone in a pillow and summoned the other liars, hoping that one of them will take it. Everyone has, like, a bogus reason for not wanting to. And we learn that Allison is out of town, apparently doing paperwork related to being married to a dead identity thief. Why would one need to go out of town to do paperwork related to a man that you married right here in Rosewood? It's a head scratcher, but okay. Also, has Allie told the other liars about being pregnant? Because Emily, like, just kind of out and says Allie isn't going to want a baby crying noise in her house, despite her not being home. Anyway, Hannah eventually takes the pillow and phone, and then the game tells her that it is her turn.
Yeah, this is, like, one of the probably more entertaining scenes of the episode, and it's mostly just for the funny visual of them playing hot potato with the phone. I also, like, it is, like, it's been a while since I feel like I've been, like, genuinely creeped out by an A thing, but A, like, knowing when Hannah was holding the phone, I was like, that is kind of creepy, because it's, like, either A, you know, I don't know how A is doing that, but it's, I don't know, I thought it was a little bit worth noting.
Okay, and you know what, in the spirit of generosity, I'm also going to give a few points for, like, the sleep deprivation situation, which was kind of a dollhouse reminiscent tactic.
I agree. I also, like, a weird thing, did you notice that there are a lot of camera angles of, like, people in mirrors in this episode?
They don't have ideas anymore, and that's something they used to do a lot, so they're doing it again. That's all that I have to. Plus, like, they've decided there's going to be a twin, so I think that that's also part of it.
And Avataria is, like, on the horizon, so I feel like that's part of it, too.
Yes.
Every episode, I'm like, is this the Avataria week? And then it's not. But we'll get there soon. Spencer gets the shush this week. So over at the loft where Hannah and Caleb, I guess, are just, like, fully living at this point, Hannah is hiding the phone from Caleb. And I guess Emily, so Emily's there, too.
Emily lives there again, I think. Even though Allison is not home at Allison's house. So Emily could definitely just,
And also Lucas is in town in this episode. So, like, where is Lucas staying? Like, what's the bed situation?
Okay. The bed situation is that Caleb and Hannah are having a fuck fest in the loft. Emily is awkwardly sleeping on the couch. And Lucas is, like, behind the curtain. That is what I think is going on.
Lucas is hiding inside that weird glass fridge. around.
Lucas is like, don't mind me. I have this life-size suit of armor that I'm just going to position right here by the bed just for no reason. Okay, guys? And then he's, like, hiding inside of it. That's what I think is happening.
Lucas might be inside the Hannikin. I mean, he definitely committed. I feel like, by the way, this scene, I feel like, is delivered and written with the sort of tempo of, like, a very bad play dress rehearsal.
Yes.
You agree. Yeah, there's just something about the way that they're talking, like, that when they bring up the champagne, I know I'm jumping ahead, but when they bring up the champagne and Hannah's like, why wait? I think there's a bottle of bubbly in the fridge. I was like, you guys couldn't have given Ashley another take on that one. Like, really?
Well, particularly the entrances, like the entrance and the exits of it are like when someone comes in, it's like a full sitcom, like, here I am coming in with these newspapers. And they're like, you know, like holding up. Yeah, it is very much that vibe.
It's like you expect the Seinfeld music to start playing when Caleb walks in. Oh my god. So anyway, Hannah's hiding the phone from Caleb and kind of discussing that with Emily when he walks in with papers proclaiming Hannah's victory. Emily, apparently, like, one of her only jobs this episode is to keep track of Hannah's schedule. So she's like, meeting, investors, Lucas, it's time to pop the bubbly. It was here, gentle listeners, as I was, you know, retching over Hannah and Caleb, that my girlfriend revealed a giant betrayal to me, which is that she still thinks that Caleb is cute and that they, in fact, were her favorite couple at this point. Thankfully, her opinion will be changed by the end of this episode.
Okay, but also, like, we have spent, like, hours watching them deteriorate over the past few seasons. So, and with intensity. But I will also say that, like, back in the days when the show was good, I would say that, like, during the good times, Caleb was my favorite straight couple, for sure.
Oh, for sure, for sure. I think that they at one point, had good chemistry and a good storyline, but...
Yeah.
No, not longer.
Not now. It was a
not
long
now.
Time ago, but...
Also, Hannah's hair looks very bad in this episode. It's just like ratty extensions.
They're probably trying to make her look like the awful mannequin.
They probably
They're like, Ashley, can you look a little more wrecked?
Yeah, it's like few ratty extensions.
We have a really bad prop.
Really help us out of a jam here, Ashley. Let's rat up that hair. So,
can you, like, go roll in the mud?
this is going to be a fun episode, you guys. So Emily is, like, tapping around on the iPad, and the news is that there's some, like, hot new blogger who is talking about Hannah's stolen design, this, like, incredible dress that only could be designed by one person. And that's basically, like, you know, we end on, like, a concerned Hannah face.
Okay. I do have to mention something else that happens in this scene, which is that we learn that Hannah has, like, the game stuff in her purse. And Emily is like, egads, how are you going to keep it a secret from your manly man, Caleb? And Hannah says, no worries. I've stashed it in my purse. And a guy... like, Caleb is never going to go through a girl's purse. And Emily is like, what are you talking about? And Hannah says, Caleb will never look through her purse because men are that afraid of accidentally touching a tampon.
Yep.
Okay. Do we think this is true? Is this true? Or is Caleb just that bad?
Well, you know what's so funny?
Or does Hannah keep, like, used tampons in her purse? Like, what is going on here?
I mean, honestly, that wouldn't be a bad defense because, like, you know?
Like, Spencer had the bloody bag in the UK. Like,
exactly. Like, just have some used tampons you can throw with the, you know, various intruders. What's so funny is that we were watching the first season of Grey's Anatomy right before this. And there is an episode where Grey's Anatomy aired in 2005. And there's an episode where George is tasked with buying tampons and is, like, really upset about that. And he's like, men don't buy tampons. Rah, 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 rah. And it's like this episode that aired nearly 10 years later is basically has the same attitude towards men and tampons. I have known men who have no problem buying tampons.
Yeah.
I think that it is a little weird, the idea that Caleb would just be going through Hannah's purse anyway. Like,
but if there were tampons, he would just,
but,
like,
he'd, like, see a tampon and, like, run away.
Scalded. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So I don't know.
I was thinking when I saw that, when I was like, is that true? When I was in college, there was a woman on campus who was, like, she was really good at protesting and counter-protesting things. And it was, like, you know, it was the 90s. There was lots of stuff to be protesting and counter-protesting, as there is now. But one of the things that she would do is she would, like, write messages on tampons and, like, use the applicators to, like, fling them. Like, when the people with the abortion signs came, or, like, when the Focus on the Family people were out there. And it is true that, like, people will, like, dive and stuff to not be hit with a tampon. So I guess there is some, you know, maybe some validity to this idea.
Yeah. Pro tip. If you, you know, are in a dicey situation, just.
Right. Right. A red marker or like some Kool-Aid and a little message. There you go.
Go for it. Go for it.
At the brew, Toby is getting pastries and announcing that Yvonne is out of her coma. Spencer immediately wants to talk about possible medical therapies, which he's like, yes, the doctors have a handle on it. Then Marco comes in, Toby leaves, and Marco suggests hiring like a buddy of his to look for Mary Drake, even though Marco himself is the police and she's a suspect in some crimes. But Spencer declines, and then Marco cajoles her into joining him to go to somewhere that he won't say where, because some activity, he thinks, might be good for her recently shot through shoulder. Lots of medical advice just flying around willy-nilly in this scene. This offer, I feel, leaves a lot to be desired, but Spencer seems charmed by it and agrees.
I have a few thoughts on this scene. Number one, Toby is like continuing the tradition that Meredith and Aria both had of having a sad little arm bandage after his big scary car accident. It's annoying that Spencer apologizes to him. Marco was wearing a very tight sweater through this episode. And like he kind of proposes this to her in a like women should just smile more kind of fashion. And I feel like Spencer, like, I kind of wonder if Troyan wasn't certain how to play Spencer in this episode or was like getting unclear direction or something, because I feel like this whole episode, Spencer's words are meant to be flirtatious, but they're delivered very antagonistically, but like not in the usual kind of like Spencer antagonism way. Like it just, something feels really off, and it's not even necessarily a chemistry thing, because I don't think these two have bad chemistry, but there's just, it's like, it's very much like, why is this relationship happening? What is this relationship?
Well, I think that what is going on, I agree with you. And if we want to give it like a really generous reading, we could say that like Spencer is just trying to distract herself with,
sure,
with this whole situation. So she's not really like 100% there for
yeah,
what's happening. But I think that the problem with it is just that like, this is happening to try and like up the stakes for the next couple of weeks. We have to get like, we, yeah, have to get Marco and Spencer a little bit more off of the starting blocks. We have to try to give them some like emotional content here. So it's really like, it just doesn't feel organic at all. It's just like this whole episode, like none of it really feels like it makes sense. It just all feels like this is like, we need to move each piece like half a step forward, so that like later we can move it like the other half steps to get where we need it to go.
Yeah, it's like this episode is like a barely still sticky piece of tape trying to like, you know, hold two pieces of paper together or something.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. So probably the best part of this episode is Aria, who is in a very low-cut top and a sort of queer-look jacket. It's got like some animal print and some leather. This is like another one of those bizarre scenes that kind of feels like a play of, in terms of characters just like coming in and coming out and dialogue and props. Hannah is worrying over the blind item and is convinced that it's Jenna for some reason, which is, they bring up Sydney, and then I was like, oh wait, is this the Namaste Bitch episode? And this is also when I remembered that this is the episode where Caleb is going to teach Aria how to blue snarf in a day to help find Sydney. There's like a weird moment where like Caleb is just watching some TV and the TV is a Nicole interview, because I guess this is like the only news story. And not only is it a Nicole interview, but it's a Nicole interview with the Prezra reunion footage in the corner of it to like double remind Aria slash the audience that like this is her wound. And then like to really just like top off the yuck in this episode, she's comforted by Caleb because they made their way back to one another, so she and Ezra can too. But there's definitely a vibe of like Aria is concerned.
First of all, I love that Emily has just vanished from the loft and been replaced by Arya with no explanation. Like, last time we were in this scene, Emily was here. Now she's poofed, but Arya is here instead. Also, it's like, we have seen them do this trick before where, like, the liars are all in Spencer's kitchen and there's, like, a news report on. But it's so awkwardly done here because the TV is, like, not even in the shot. So I actually had to rewind it a couple of times to be like, did Arya just, like, get a psychic vibe to go and turn on the TV? Like, is she so over this plot line as I am over this plot line that she was just like, let's see what's on the tube? Like, because that's sort of how it reads. But of course, it's just more lazy layering.
I actually think a, like, funny thing that they could have added to make that make more sense, and also, like, as an interesting character moment for Arya, would have been if she had, like, a Google alert on her phone every time something Nicole-related was, like, on TV. And, like, that would kind of go into, like, the Arya obsession that we've seen. And also it would, like, make a moment like that land a little better and even be, like, a little bit funny.
Or have A, turn on the television.
Sure.
And make it unable to be turned off, or like have A send her a text message with this in it. Like, yeah, there are many, many ways they could have done this that would have been like less awkward and more interesting, but didn't bother.
Nope, not so much.
Okay. Oh, here's Emily. She left the loft in order to be a supporting character in a needless Tobey scene. They are observing Yvonne, who has not yet spoken. And Tobey projects all of his emotions onto her because, of course, he does. Yvonne murmurs Toby's name and he rushes to her, sending Emily to go and fetch a nurse. Since we had already heard that Yvonne woke up from her coma, this scene has no reason to exist.
Yeah, it really doesn't. Emily is wearing a weird choker. That was like my only note for this scene.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kelsey's comment on this next scene was, do these people just not have jobs? Which, accurate. So Hannah and Caleb are back at the loft, and it's like this, they're like...
They had been out of the loft, but are now returned to the loft.
I think, was the last scene at Prezra's apartment, maybe?
Was it? Maybe?
Maybe, like, they
I
went...
I thought it was at the loft. Who knows?
Maybe they went over to Prezra's apartment to talk to Arya for some reason, and then now they're back. I don't know. It's weird. But anyway, they're back at the loft. Maybe they, like, ran out for groceries. They're back at the loft. And, like, they're back at the loft with, like, a lot of urgency. Like, we're gonna go do this thing. Caleb walks off to find something, like, computer something. And then there's this, like, terrifying, big, scary knock on the door. And it's, like, we get this, like, zoom on the door. And it's, like, a... Like, the door is about to be, like, blown open, like, fee-fi-fo-fum. Caleb opens the door, and he's horrified by what he sees. And then Hannah asks what it is. And then I'm horrified by what it is, because it is a bad prop. It's this mannequin that has, like...
But what does Caleb say it is? So dramatically.
He says, it's you. Which, like, I'd be like, really, Caleb? Like, I'd be a little offended by that, honestly. But it's like, God, how would you even describe this? It's wearing an outfit that Hannah would never wear. It's like a lumpy jacket. It's kind of like an early season Spencer outfit, honestly. But the face is like this, like, horrifying, half-stitched together, like, Ed Gein-style mask. And it is, like, kind of... crooked, like it's kind of propped at this like weird angle. The hair, as we mentioned, is atrocious. This thing is inexplicable.
I definitely would not look at this and say this looks like Hannah. It doesn't look like anything, as much as it looks like a mess. And like from the line delivery, from like the way they were like really coaching Caleb on this line, you expect Hannah's twin to be outside. You expect you expect Annabella Dupree to be like just in the hallway being like, y'all, it's like, that's what you're expecting to have happen. But no, it's just this like lumpy looking sewn face mess. And the camera, because they like needed to pad this episode, the camera lingers on the mannequin for like a super long time as if they are super proud of their work. And it is not warranted. That level of pride is very misplaced.
Thank you for bringing up Annabella Dupree and reminding me of a time when this show was fun.
But that's what they're acting like. They're acting like, oh, they're acting like Caleb, Hannah's like boyfriend of many years, is just standing there, and it's like he can't. Which is the real Hannah? A Cylon out here. Like if I opened the door and saw this thing, I would be like, "There's a terrifying mannequin out here."
Yeah, no, it's not great. It's not great. Yeah.
Okay, so, like, we go to break as they're still looking at this horrifying object. When they come back, Hannah is explaining to Caleb about the game. And then, despite learning that there is a phone involved, which Hannah currently has on her, and despite lecturing Hannah about how phones work and being a noted phone hacker, Caleb is primarily interested in getting inside the game board, which is entirely, again, one of those plot points that exists only to get the story from point A event to point B event with no care for motivation or believability. Anyway, Caleb also points out that the doll talks. You pull a string on its back, and it says, for more information, see the appendix. What a hat on a hat on a hat. Like, why in the world could that just have been a okay, all right, fine. We have a talking doll. It's not taking Emily to a gay barn, unfortunately. It's just telling Hannah about this appendix. Hannah tries to tell Caleb that he is not invited to play the game, but Caleb is a man, so he will do what he wants.
I feel like Hannah is not appropriately horrified when this thing starts to talk.
I feel like, you know how you said, you thought last episode, like maybe Spencer was just stoned through the whole thing?
Yeah.
I sort of feel like were there maybe like hallucinogenic mushrooms or something and that stuff that Aria was making? And Hannah and Spencer both ate them prior to this episode, because they're just both sort of like, they sort of seem very out of it. Like, even though Hannah just had this horrifying thing delivered to her door, and even though she has now had to tell Caleb, who thought this was like her identical twin, even though she has just had to tell him about the game, and has just learned that like, if Caleb was like making a mannequin of her, this is what it would look like. Like, despite having learned both of those things, she's just very, like, very kind of, like, one note throughout the rest of the episode. She's kind of not phased.
Yeah, I feel that way about her and about Spencer. Also, I don't know when or how, but somewhere in the timeline of this show, of the existence of this mannequin, Lucas has had sex with it. Like, that hurt. Yeah, it's not a coincidence that this thing and Lucas show back up in the same episode. That's all I'm saying.
Oh no, A stole Lucas's Hannah sex doll. That is so upsetting.
Yeah. That's so Lucas. So Marco and Spencer are at the rec center on this. And I just, like, this is how much I cared. My notes just say Marco and Spencer are here. And I didn't even say where here was. I just said they're here. They're on this, like, weird sort of date at a rec center where they're going to play ping pong. And it's bizarre because Spencer makes mention of them volunteering with kids, but they don't do any volunteering with kids. They just are here to play ping pong. And guess what? That's what they're going to do for the rest of the episode, y'all. The vibe is weird and like slightly antagonistic. And I took the note here, like, is this Alex Drake or is Spencer still just stoned? Like, I'm not sure.
Yeah. Like, and also Spencer is just like so thrilled about this idea that they're going to play ping pong. Like, she is so much, like, I took a racket sports elective in college, and Spencer is like so much happier about this ping pong situation than I would be.
Yeah, it's weird.
At the hospital, from which Emily has now vanished, Tobey is making Yvonne pick up a rubber ball. Then he is wanting her to marry him today. He's been waiting for days. He does not want to wait anymore. God, he was waiting for days? Well, excuse a girl for being in a coma, Toby. Yvonne is apparently still woozy from the coma / head injury, as she seems pleased as punch at his suggestion.
Yeah, her manicure still looks great after that coma and after that car accident. Kelsey's comment on this scene is she took one look at Toby and said, wow, there is nothing behind his eyes. It's accurate.
So true. Our favorite big block of wood.
Yep, Toby. Lucas is seeming especially gay as he sits on the couch and talks to Hannah about her upcoming investors meeting. I don't know what this meeting was going to be before, but he's like, maybe a visual aid would help. Like, maybe you could show them some of your designs. And I'm like, that wasn't the plan all along. What is this meeting? Who are these investors?
Super nebulous.
Yeah, exactly. He says that he believes in her, and he like kind of aggressively wants to look at the weird Hannah doll that I'm half convinced he created to sleep with. And then like it kind of we sort of cut over to like a phone call with Emily where she is going to be roped into helping look for Sydney.
Do you think that like Lucas, like he knows that his Hannah sex doll is missing? And then he sees something in the loft and he's like, I cannot fucking believe that Hannah and Caleb are having a threesome with my Hannah sex doll. It's so unfair.
I also like the idea of him being like, damn, I know I put that down somewhere. Don't you hate it when you put your sex doll somewhere and you cannot find it?
Oh my goodness. Okay. So Ari and Emily are doing research. And by doing research, I mean they are going online to look at Sydney's, I guess, personal website. Here are some facts about Sydney that they're going to throw out for us here. She went to Berkeley. Gay! Double majored in economics and French. Gay! And lives in a loft on the river in Fishtown. Gay! Emily is like, ooh, that's pricey real estate. She's a bank teller. Aria says she works in private banking for people with a lot of money, like a lot. Oh yes, money. The thing that is not real on this show. So what do we think Sydney's actual job is? Does she work for like a family office, a hedge fund? Who knows? Not the writers. They learn that Sydney checked into a charity gala that Senator Daughter was at, and they find a picture online so convenient. It's a picture of Sydney snapping a picture of Senator Daughter wearing the Hannah dress. This leads them to decide that, number one, she was the person who tipped off the fashion blog, and also, somewhat of a leap, but we're making it, that she shot Spencer. Emily thinks that they should be very careful, and Aria says they are not going to confront her. They just want to get information.
Yeah, they think Sydney was like up there on the grassy knoll. This picture is like so terribly photoshopped. And what's so funny is like, it couldn't have been that hard to get the actress who plays Sydney and the actress who plays the senator's daughter in the same room for 10 minutes, throw up a backdrop, have her put on that ugly dress and snap a picture. But like, apparently that task eluded production. And so we have this.
We do. It's about as well put together as the Hannikin.
It is. So we have this like phone call. There's a lot of phone calls in this episode. Between Caleb and Hannah, he is at the barn studying the game while Hannah is still at the loft studying various books and trying to figure out what the whole appendix clue might be in reference to. They ponder if perhaps there could be batteries in the game, to which Kelsey said, of course it has batteries in it, you idiots. Hannah figures out that AD wants her to cut it open, meaning the Anna doll. The appendix is not the kind you find in a book, but the kind you find in a body. And then we, like, cut to Hannah performing surgery with a steak knife on this, like, disgusting, bloody, horrifying doll getting, like, sprayed with blood. It's a very creepy visual, but they, like, only – they don't stay on it for very long. And she pulls out this little baggie that says, "Wear me" on it.
This was actually, like, one of the better moments of the episode, and they really rush it.
I
don't know why we had to have that phone call with Caleb, because it seems very out of character to me that Hannah would hear appendix and think, oh, of a book.
Yeah, I agree. And also, like, this is another thing where having the doll not look very much like Hannah, like, lessens the impact of this storyline, because there could be something interesting about, like, Hannah has to cut into this version of herself. And, like, you know, like, there's something there. There's an idea there. But, like, the whole thing is so cheap and horrifying that, like, it doesn't hit that way at all. And it's just being, like, so badly paced, as you said.
Yeah. Yeah, it is bad. I will say that one of my favorite things in this episode, and the bar is low, like, I'm really scavenging to find things that I'm enjoying. But one of them is we keep cutting back to Caleb and the fucking game board. And every time he's doing something, like in this scene, he's like has a laser pointer and he's like going over the game with a laser pointer, like as if he is like at the grocery store checkout and he's hoping to like ring up a price on something. that is what he is doing to the board. And like while he's doing so you could almost be like, oh, okay, he's doing some, like, high-tech, you know, gizmo, you know, who's a what's it about this. But as he's doing it, his big thing is, like, does it have batteries? And it's just like, oh, my God. So we're just going to track that in this scene, he's using the laser pointer to see if he can scan and get a price check on, I guess, eggs.
Yeah, that seems about right.
Oh, okay, so elsewhere, Spencer is on this interminable ping pong date. She is bragging about being the ping pong champion of horseback riding camp for 5 summers running, the same camp her mother went to. Oh, wait, no, her adoptive mother. Ugh. Marco was like raised on the mean streets of this community center by wolves and also by a kindly woman who used to run the place. Spencer beats him, and we get a brief monologue about how he's upset that they didn't find the second firearm at the scene of the shooting, and the brass is pressuring him because the, you know, Archer Dunhill case is still open. Again, this episode has, like, a lot of unseen pressure from imaginary people in it. It's very, like, Jane Austen's Emma. We have, like, the vagrants who are, like, wandering around, and all of these, you know, someone is robbing the hen houses, egad. But anyway, so the brass is bothering him. Spencer's wounded shoulder rips open just enough for a delicate flower of blood to stain her blouse. Marco goes off to find a first aid kit, and Spencer gazes happily at a drawing on the wall that seems to have been made by Marco when he was a child. And it's, like, amazingly well-preserved, considering that Marco is a grown man. Also, Spencer is ignoring calls from Aria and Emily.
Also, there's, like, not really much other art on that bulletin board. It's, like, kind of sad. It's, like, was Marco the only kid who came here? It's a little weird. My funny anecdote about this particular scene is there's, like, some shots, because they're playing ping pong, there's, like, some shots of Spencer's, like, full look. And it's like, it's a very good look. She's wearing like a white button up, like tucked into jeans. And, I commented aloud while we were watching this scene, you know, she looks really hot. I love this queer look. And then I looked over at Kelsey, and Kelsey looked at herself, and we realized that Kelsey was essentially wearing the exact same outfit. I guess I have a type.
Love that for you.
So Aria suddenly, conveniently, knows everything about hacking. And in the car with Emily, she, like, quickly produces the various hacking-related products that Emily will need to trap Sydney. They kind of put a bit of a lampshade on this, but it's, like, they're not like this is not really being played for a comedy beat so much as it's just like, eh, Caleb's not available for this scene. Like, don't worry. they see Sydney and Emily prepares to make her move.
Okay. So I have some notes regarding the storefront that we see, which is like where Sydney works. It is a storefront that says Moorhead James Private Client Banking, because of course it does. And this is just another example of like the rich ass people who don't actually exist this week. Here are some people in PLL land who are so rich that they could potentially use this service, which is generally for if you have $750,000 in investable assets and above. So multimillionaires, basically. Lucas, Presra Fitz, the Hastings, Noel Kahn's family, Adam Vampert, Caleb's biological mom. This is a legit example of how money doesn't exist on this show, because now Ari is just like, who could possibly, like, they're eventually going to be like, only Charlotte has enough millions of dollars to be, like, the client here, which is just like, oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it's very, I don't know. It's, yeah, it's very lazy. It's very lazy. And it's very, like, everything's being written with the memory of a goldfish.
Also, is it too late to become an Aria is a stan? Because Aria learning how to blue snarf and like mastering all the who's a what's it gadgets that Caleb has given them is very impressive. Like, look what happens to Aria when she doesn't have to just be like moping around a Presria storyline all day long. She could have solved this whole thing.
She really could have. And, you know, I mean, I don't think it's too late to jump on that bandwagon, because let me remind you, Avataria.
Okay. So Hannah is showing Caleb the dress that the game has instructed her to wear. It's short, he says, and says it's short enough for them to be able to see her. And I quote, spicy tuna roll. Throw a tampon at this man's head, I say. Anyway, Hannah says the investors, oh, here's another fact about them, are Japanese, and that this dress is cultural appropriation, a phrase the show just learned about, maybe? And they will be offended and not back her, and Lucas will lose a bunch of money. How much money could Lucas have possibly invested at this point? Like, whatever. Hannah needs Caleb, who is now poking the game with a tiny, tiny screwdriver to stop this thing by tonight.
Yeah, there is a kind of like a sad moment in this scene where Hannah's like, you know, this was a chance for her to be expressive and creative and confident, and people don't usually see her that way. And what's especially sad is like Caleb doesn't see her that way. Like, we've seen that time and time again. However, a funny moment of this scene is that Caleb refers to Hannah's spicy tuna roll, and Kelsey announced that she has officially turned on Caleb and no longer ships them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's like, first of all, he's not even really looking at her when he's saying that. He's just like criticizing her for having this short dress in her possession. But also, the thing that kills me about this whole dress plotline is that Hannah is a fashion designer. She has hours before the meeting. Is there nothing she could do to this dress or with this outfit to like pull it off? Nothing?
Yeah, it's not like the text said, like, wear me and don't alter me. Like,
yeah, wear me and don't you dare wear leggings. Like, come on.
Right, right. Or cut the, you know, the little top part and turn it into something else. Like, yeah, it's also just so funny because I think that they think they're being clever by having the dress be a red herring. But it just ends up feeling like, oh, that's just not going to go anywhere. Okay. Like, yeah. So Emily walks up to Sydney, who, as we recall from last week, she may or may not have recently slept with. Emily kind of tries to pull the old, like, oh, hey, Sydney, haven't seen you in 5 years. But Sydney isn't here for coincidences. She wonders where the beef is. And I was immediately reminded of, like, how weird her voice is. Like, like, stop with the coincidences. The coincidences, Emily. I know about, I've already talked to Caleb and Mona. Where's the beef? New York, New York.
I think her voice is really gay.
I think it is too, but it's also kind of like a Muppet. It's like a gay Muppet. Sydney claims that all she did was deliver drinks, and Emily points out that some bad stuff has gone down, such as, you know, shootings and beheadings. Sydney claims that after high school, she and Jenna drifted apart, and she wishes it would have stayed that way. She asks what Emily's excuse is for continuing to be involved in all of the friendship drama. Also, Sydney is so gay. The way she tells this tale makes it very clear, at least to my gay eyes, that she is referring to not a friendship, but a love affair between her and Jenna. Back in the car, Aria has determined that Sydney is going to some eye place and wonders if that's where she might be taking Jenna.
Okay. I just want to talk about the fact that everything in Sydney's schedule is like on an electronic, giant-sized post-it note calendar. Everything exists in one-hour blocks. So, for example, the 4:15 p.m. appointment at the Vogel Vision Institute, which is the one they assume immediately has something to do with Jenna, it has to be marked on the electronic post-it as 4:15 p.m. rather than simply being logged for 4:15 p.m. because that time doesn't exist on the calendar. And everything is full hour blocks, even though her next appointment is going to take like 5 minutes. Oh my goodness. I am also going to mention that there is a 6 p.m. appointment for yoga, gay, and a 9 p.m. appointment for drinks with Jen and Laura. Could she not have had Jenna in her calendar as Jen? Like, why didn't the production people come up with, like, just a different name for one friend that she's going to have? But also, meeting your two female friends for drinks at 9 p.m.? Gay!
Sounds like an orgy to me. Oh, man.
Oh, it's the next scene and we're still here. Okay, Emily and Aria are staking out Vogel Vision. They discover via technology that Sydney is dropping off a deposit for a surgical procedure for Jenna. And they should mark it down at the clinic as being from AD, anonymous donor. No, Sydney doesn't need to schedule the procedure today. So this clinic, number one, does not have an online payment option available and also allows you to put money down on surgeries that are not even on the docket yet. Okay.
It's a little weird.
It, presumably in cash, like presumably Sydney is walking there with like a giant like bag of $100 bills. And she's just like, I'm putting down this deposit for new eyeballs. Jenna will call you and advise when she wishes to schedule her eyeballs. And the clinic is like, okay.
This is a totally normal way to schedule surgeries. Yeah. Nothing to see here. Yeah, sorry. Do you have more you wanted to say about it?
I do not.
Yeah, and I mean, the last little bit is that they see that Sydney's texts say, did you do it? And she replies, it's done. This scene reminded me of a scene from 30 Rock that I know I've referenced before, where it's when Liz and Kenneth are trying to track down Tracy, and they go to the like pizza place where he's been ordering pizza, and the guy is just like giving them all of these like extremely helpful clues, and he's like, I'm gonna go in the back and see if I can think of more ways that I can be helpful to you guys. And I feel like that's the vibe of this Sydney phone call. It's like, oh yeah, check, Jenna, eyes, AD, cash, we got it.
Also, it is one of those things, like, so Aria has mastered absolutely all of the high-tech stalking devices.
Oh, for
except
sure.
Except that when Sydney is getting phone calls or texts, it still just says blocked number. So even though they have all of the super secret spy stuff, a blocked number is still just like, well, it's a blocked number. What can you possibly do?
What can you do? Yeah, it's also like, once again, the whole back and forth of Jenna's eyesight is just so ridiculous. So ridiculous. Yes. So let's see. We go over now to, we start this scene with a line that I found really creepy, which Spencer is saying to Marco, your hands are a lot bigger than you when you were a kid. While he's like bandaging her, you know, bleeding bullet wound up. And he tells the story about how the woman who ran this community center was special, and his own mother was an addict, and so this woman was like a surrogate mother figure to him, and why are we getting so much Marco backstory? Spencer gets all bandaged up, and they hear some singing, and Spencer is very taken with it, and draws an immediate parallel between her situation and Marco's. Isn't it so convenient that the writing worked out that way? So that, Spencer can comment on both of their biological and surrogate mother figures. They kiss, and we intercut their kiss with Toby and Yvonne getting married. That scene is very boring. Kelsey's commentary, she took issue with the pearl embroidered cardigan that Yvonne is wearing to get married in, and said, "Tell me this relationship is sexless without telling me this relationship is sexless."
Oh my God, that is amazing. I would just like to say that the Marco backstory that they're giving him here, it's that his mother was an addict when he was growing up, that his mother was addicted to pain pills. So I actually feel that gives us a new perspective to his actions with Spencer in the elevator, as it tells us that he grew up recognizing the signs of an addict being in an altered state. And also might be working through some things by assaulting women who are in that state. So,
I actually feel
like this backstory is like, he's like ripping off his shirt and just showing like a giant red flag tattoo upon his chest is what I feel like is going on.
He's like, "Spencer, you may have like blood running down your shoulder, but take a look at my big red flag." That's true.
Also, like, Spencer's whole like, "Gasp, I am a foundling and you're a foundling." And it's like, Spencer, your ex-boyfriend Caleb literally is a foundling. Like, he used to live in an air vent. So I feel like it's just a series of unusual choices here that they are making.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Even Toby, I mean, he's kind of a foundling as well. The use of Marco in this is just, it's really annoying. It's like, why are we spending so much time with this character in this backstory?
Yeah, I'm going to give like a Kristen corner here to just say that she didn't watch this episode with me, but now that she is on oxygen all the time, she has really been noting any kind of people on oxygen representation in television. Mm-hmm. And so when I saw Yvonne here being on oxygen, Kristen's observation is that people are only ever on oxygen when they are either coded as bad or coded as near death. It's one of those two things, inevitably.
Interesting.
And so Yvonne being on oxygen here, just guess which one it's going to be.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. I've never thought about that before. I will be keeping an eye on that.
Yes. And then it actually, after the wedding, which my note on the wedding is, Toby is dressed to the nines. We have like two back-to-back scenes of heterosexual kissing, and we're going to cut back to Marco and Spencer kissing some more.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting choice. But like, does Yvonne not have any like family that might want to be here? Like, either for her wedding or for her being awake from the coma, perhaps her mom who ran against Veronica, or any of the people who came to her engagement party?
I was thinking that too. I was like, what? Like, did Toby just not call them because he just wanted her all to himself? It's very weird.
Mm-hmm. So once the heterosexual kissing is finally finished, Aria and Emily are still on the stakeout and still doing a bad job with it. They aggressively corner Sydney and demand to know where Jenna is. They seem to have a plan to make her get in their car and take them to Jenna, which would be kidnapping. But Sydney denies, even as Aria frog marches her into an alley and pins her arm behind her back. Karate Aria returns. She kicked Charlotte off the balcony once, don't you know? Emily threatens her that they will show up at yoga and drinks with her friends, which is a very, very sloppy play, in that it gives Sydney the info that they have obviously hacked her useless calendar, like, and kind of like cuts out the whole point of they were going to follow her until she led them to Jenna. Sydney continues to provide them with various implausible stories. She doesn't know anything about AD. One of her rich-ass clients, the bank, was donating to Jenna. No details available. Despite the fact that this is all nonsense, they let her go. Sydney leaves with a great namaste, bitch. And then we learn that this was all a ruse to get a tracker in Sydney's bag. Also really enjoy Sydney referring to Aria as Emily's chihuahua.
Yeah. This is probably the best scene of this episode because it just has the most energy in it. Aria is a lot of fun. I do think it is so funny, like you said, that like Aria and Emily are so proud of themselves in this scene, but like they're doing a bad job. Like they needed a Spencer in on this plan, or a Mona, because it's like they're just kind of spilling all their cards on the table here.
Yes.
Yeah. So we continue with like the weird mirrored shots in this episode when Spencer arrives back at the barn to find Caleb in her living room looking over the game. It's like,
oh, awkward. Wait, did we skip Emily calling Hannah?
Oh, Emily. Oh, yes. So Emily calls to check. It was like such a nothing scene that I just like tacked it on to the end of this. But basically, Emily calls to check in with Hannah, who was wearing the dress.
And this is like the only look that we get at Hannah in the dress. And it's super brief, possibly because the show understood it had not done a good job of making this dress look like the fashion faux pas that would doom Hannah forever.
Yeah. Or maybe they were like, well, we don't want to get like canceled for like having a bunch of scenes of Hannah in this dress. Like, I don't know.
This dress is just as big of a missed mark as the Hannikin. I don't feel like this dress looks markedly different from something that Hannah would just normally wear. Do you?
I don't. I think it's that it's like they're like Chinese investors and this is like a culturally appropriative dress. I think that that's what we're supposed to be more concerned by. But they're like not. None of this has been well thought out.
No, and I also don't feel that the dress reads as like, you would not look at this dress and instantly think, oh, this is cultural appropriation. It's not like the kind of dress that, like, you would see, like, in a Halloween shop or something like that.
Sure. I mean, this plot line is, like, almost over before it even, like, got off the ground.
Yes. Okay. So yeah, I mean, this is another scene that doesn't need to exist. No information is exchanged, but like,
there's so many of these phone call scenes that it's like, you could just cut them out. Like they're so clearly just padding because it's just relaying information that we've already seen. So anyway, Spencer arrives back at the barn to find Caleb in her living room, looking over the game. There's like, this scene is weird. I feel because it's like, it's awkward between them kind of, and they kind of acknowledge the awkwardness, but also like they've interacted since they broke up, so it's like the show just remembered that they're exes. He sort of like half-heartedly offers to leave, but she's like, no, it's fine, I want this to all be fine. He considers the various noises the game makes, and they both comment on how they want this all to be okay, and it kind of is like, they kind of seem to be like somewhat at ease with one another in a way where you're like, probably these two people will be sleeping with one another at some point. Kelsey's comment was that it's the reason that this is all just fine between them is because they're both gay, which, you know, is also a theory that works. Spencer goes to get them some beers while he continues fiddling around. She tells him about Marco, which is interesting because I'm not really sure that she's even told the other liars about Marco. She comments on all the bad timing. Caleb says that he has picked up on the vibes and says that Spencer deserves someone who's good to her, unlike him. She turns around to talk about dinner options. And, okay, before I get to the end of the scene, let me just ask. In a world where Caleb didn't get gassed by the game and Hannah was, like, at this investor meeting for the next several hours and Spencer ordered dinner, are these two hooking up on the couch?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so too. The vibes, it's so funny because he's like, I picked up on some vibes. And I'm like, I'm picking up on some vibes between the two of you. It's just, those two have chemistry. Like, it just can't be beat. But Caleb pries up one of the buildings on the board and a gas sprays right into his face. He stumbles backward onto the couch, can't breathe, Spencer runs over to him and calls 911. He's gasping for air. It's very dramatic.
It is. It is extremely, extremely dramatic. First of all, what would you do if you returned to your barn and you found your ex, who previously, like up until a few weeks ago, lived in this barn with you before dumping you for your best friend? Like, how are you going to feel about your ex just being in your barn when you get home? I myself would be way more mad than Spencer is here.
I mean, first of all, that sounds like a lot of lesbian drama that you just described.
Well, also, like, Spencer lives in a barn. Like, that's extremely gay. I don't know why.
Very gay. Like,
really talked about that before. But yes, Spencer lives in the barn of queerness.
Yes, she does. She absolutely does. Yeah, I would be pretty weirded out. And in general, I mean, Spencer has a lot of reasons to be pretty mad at Caleb, and she just kind of inexplicably isn't. And I think that this is like yet another function of the liar relationships just mattering less, that like all of the sort of relationships that, you know, like trickle out from those main core liar relationships matter less as well. And it's like hard to even kind of keep the thread straight on like who's upset with who at this point.
Well, Spencer has not had any one-on-one scenes with any of the liars this episode. She's just been in group scenes with them. So her getting a scene with Caleb is like more time than she's gotten with any of her friends. But also, not only is her ex there in her barn, but also he's like drinking her beer and saying things like, oh, you know, I hope that he's good to you. Like, if anybody who ever treated me as shabbily as Caleb treated Spencer, and then weeks after reuniting with one of my friends delivered a line like that, I would be full of righteous fury. Oh my goodness. Spencer, like, she is obviously stoned because she does not just break one of the beer bottles over Caleb's stupid head.
Oh, I know. It's so condescending.
She doesn't even just let him die of being gassed.
I know.
She actually calls for help.
She just, like, leans back against the counter and starts drinking her beer. Like, let's take its course.
But also, the items that Caleb uses on the game, when Spencer comes in, he's listening to the game with a stethoscope. And then later, he uses, like, a nail file to pry up that building.
Well, and this is another case where, like, I feel like it's a missed opportunity, because there's a way where they could frame, AD could kind of, like, frame Spencer in this more directly, because it's, like, just the two of them. But, like, it just kind of, Hannah's just, like, kind of pissy with her later.
Yeah. Well, also, like, the idea that this game is just so, like, no one can get into it. Oh, my goodness. Like, really? Like, if they took a blowtorch, they couldn't get into it. If they took an axe, they couldn't get into it. Like,
yeah,
it cannot be done because your stethoscope and your laser pointer and your tiny, tiny screwdriver and, like, I don't know, what else did he have in that bag? Like, a little Allen wrench from IKEA? Like, those things didn't work, so just nothing can be done?
He's, like, tapping at it with, like, a protractor or something.
God. Okay. Good God, how are there still 9 minutes left in this episode? Okay, so Lucas is waiting for Hannah in the lobby of the Radley. And wherever the drinks with the investors are, they will have to take an elevator to get there, despite the fact that the bar is in the lobby. Wow, I really hope that it's in a conference room and not like just a hotel room that Lucas booked, and oh gosh, at the last minute, all the investors just canceled, and isn't it a coincidence that Hannah is wearing such a short dress?
Ooh. And, like, the Hannikin is up there in the room, and he's like, how about a
how did this get here?
Oh, he goes, oh, that's where I left it.
Anyway, Hannah thanks Lucas for this chance and makes him promise they will always be friends. She is wearing a trench over the dress, which actually it looks kind of great. There are a bunch of dresses in garment bags. They're on a rack that she's wheeling around, so we don't get to see what any of them look like. The show is really out of its depth trying to do Hannah as a designer, it feels like. But anyway, just as they are about to get into the elevator, Hannah's phone pings and she learns that Caleb is in the hospital. Lucas says to give him the sketchbook. He'll figure something out. She should go. And so Hannah and the dress and the trench coat go off into the night.
Yeah, I also feel like we've talked about how sort of Lucas is sometimes the stand-in for Mona when, like, the things that Hannah wants to say to Mona, she can't say for whatever reason. And I feel like this feels like a little bit of an example of that, where she's saying, you know, thank you, you're such a generous friend. I want you to promise that we'll always be friends. That's how I'm choosing to read it, because I was furious that Lucas was getting this speech and not Mona.
Yeah, and also, if only Mona were involved in this, Mona could have taken the whole meeting and wowed the investors and dispatched Lucas and the creepy Hannikin in one go.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, this is so much a thing of, like, if Mona was here, all of this would have been figured out in 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
Toby is feeding Yvonne butterscotch crimpets, which, did you know what a butterscotch crimpet was?
I did not. I care enough to look it up? Also, no.
Okay, it's apparently some kind of sweet thing that she is really a big fan of. He asks about their honeymoon. She does not look very well. And she'd rather have city than beach. And they run through the various options of places that they could visit. Ending with Moscow. Kelsey's comment, I want to go someplace that hates gay people as much as this show does. And then she admitted that she said that just because she knew it would get repeated on the podcast. He suggests that they could just keep going and going and going. He asks if she's happy. She replies, happiest. And the flowers drop from her limp hand as the music plays, R.I.P. Yvonne. What a horrible way to kill this character.
Yeah, like the flower bouquet drops in slow motion as she's shuffling off this mortal coil. And what is the last thing she has to do in this life? Emotional labor, where Toby is demanding to hear how happy she is. So with her dying breath, she has to be like, happiest.
Not even the happiest or the happiest I've ever been, just happiest.
What an odd choice that they didn't just kill her off in the car crash.
Right?
To begin with. Were they just keeping her around as an obstacle to Spoby? Like, they actually even could have had her be killed when, like, by Noel Kahn. Like, when Noel Kahn, like, goes to the trailer and, like, she was severely beaten up and in the hospital, like, at the end of the last half season. Like, it's so weird that they were like, brush with death, brush with death. Oh, wait, now here is actual death.
Yeah, it's really, and it adds a layer of cruelty to just, like, drag this character along for all this time.
Yeah, I mean, my note here is Yvonne dies or possibly fakes her own death in order to get out of this marriage, and she'll turn up in season 13C as Spencer's second wife.
I think that's great. I like that a lot. I like that a lot.
Well, here we are in another hospital room where Caleb is also on oxygen to show how close he was to death by gas. But mostly his eyes are just red, and he says this is slightly worse than when Hannah sprayed him with the hairspray during a much better season of this show. She is clucking over him. He's fine. She tells him that she bailed on the investor meeting, but Lucas was going to cover. Caleb is worried that she skipped her turn in the game. Hannah's like, that doesn't matter. You matter. And we know that Caleb almost died because he doesn't even bring up the time her career broke them up last time. So, you know, I guess that's a win. Hannah leaves the room to tend to her phone, which pings.
Yeah. And then we have a scene that I didn't like, where the liars are all here in the lobby of the hospital. Hannah has gotten a message from AD about losing her prize. Aria hilariously is like, does the puzzle piece just go to someone else? And I'm like, this is where I want the show that's just like the other residents of all the AD and liar shenanigans. Hannah is in a bitey mood, angry that her turn was so much worse than Spencer's. And there's like a funny thing here where like she's clearly upset with Spencer. And obviously it's not about Spencer's turn. It's about the fact that like Spencer was there when this thing happened with Caleb and like Hannah feels weird about it. But that goes unexplored for now. Arya makes, I think, a very astute suggestion that the unfairness of the game is intentional to keep them off balance and keep them infighting rather than focusing on trying to catch AD. Spencer leaves to go visit Toby, and Hannah sort of, again, with a bit of attitude, sends the other liars away. There just seems to be no camaraderie here anymore. Emily and Arya realize that Sydney is on the move, and Emily will take first watch. Jesus, we are really doing everything we can to try to inject a little bit of intrigue and momentum into the show, aren't we?
Oh, we truly are. I think that, like, Hannah's attitude towards Spencer would have worked so much better if something had happened between Spencer and Caleb.
Yeah, or, like, if it had looked like something had happened.
Well, right, like, the game spewed acid, and Spencer had to, like, rip all of Caleb's clothes off to, like, preserve his masculine physique, like, something like that, I feel like, is sort of like what Hannah is bringing to this, as opposed to like, yeah, he was in Spencer's barn uninvited, he got gassed.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. And it's also just like, it speaks to the pacing issue of like, the whole last 10 minutes of this episode are so rushed that it's like, there's not really, like, we don't even really know, like, Hannah got that call, but like, Hannah didn't get to like, walk in on something, or, like, you know, yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's another part. Like, was there a missing scene where, like, Spencer was, like, you know, holding Caleb's hand at his bedside or something, you know?
Exactly. Like,
who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? Okay, so Spencer heads over to the coma ward, and she finds Tobey still in his wedding suit, now rumpled by sorrow and death. He is doing a zombie grief walk. Spencer rushes to him and embraces him as he collapses into a heap of man sobs.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, it's a very, very, very sad Toby. Sad, sad, sad Toby. Arya.
I mean, sad Toby. Not so sad that he's not like collapsing into his former lover's arms, but yeah, real, real sad.
Real sad. So Arya returns home to tell us and Prezra that Sabrina's quit. She's at some pastry castle in Atlanta or something. And this message is so funny because she's like, do you want me to hire a new pastry chef? I don't know what I'm doing, Prezra. Do you want me to just run the brew now? Are you ever coming back? I want to help you, but I don't know what's going on. It's like an amazing message. And I kind of just love the implication that she just is like, oh, yeah, so I just run the brew now. Like, that's my job. So she's in Prezra's darkened apartment. Somebody stands up in the darkness. Arya grabs a knife. But who could it be? It is Nicole just sitting there like a weirdo in the darkness. And looking kind of a bit feral.
Yeah, looking like she just walked out of the jungle.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I really love Arya's voicemail that she is leaving. Also, information contained in this long, rambly message is that Sabrina tried to get a hold of Prezra to tell him that she was quitting, but, like, got no response. And also that Sabrina gave Arya a list of possible replacements. So clearly she understands the level of work that Prezra as a team are willing to do in this business, which is very, very little.
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of like, okay, well, I'll just do some of this work.
yeah, I mean, also, we don't know, like, when did Arya, like, hear from Sabrina? Like, this message could have been left for Arya 2 weeks ago. We really don't know. The brew might have been closed for, like, I guess it wasn't, because Toby was there earlier today getting pastries, so Sabrina was still on the clock before going to the pastry castle in Atlanta.
Also, does Emily know about this? Has Emily been in any contact with Sabrina? Or is that just, like, completely done now that, like, Paige is back in town?
I don't know. That's an excellent question. I'm hoping, for Sabrina's sake, that she, like, catches Janelle Monáe's eye while she's in Atlanta.
I think that's great. I like that a lot.
Yeah, I will also give Arya props for doing something that nobody ever does on this show, which is turning on the lights when there is a threatening person in their space.
Yeah, not just, like, lunging.
Yeah, also call out to the fact that the second floor of Prezra's apartment is only there like when the moon is full, like, or every 100 years, like Brigadoon, because Arya comes in through the door and there is no staircase where Presra walked up with her bag just a few hours ago.
The image, I have thought of the image of Presra doing the pretend walking down the stairs bit multiple times, and every time it makes me laugh. So thank you for that.
Okay, so at the police department, Marco, who was like off duty this whole day playing ping pong, but he's back and he is wearing black gloves and his tight little sweater, and he is carefully opening a package that is addressed Rosewood PD. I don't know where the brass is, but Marco opens this, he opens this package, and like, you can tell that like something smells because everyone's like, oh, that's not good. And it's like wrapped in this little towel with ribbon, and he undoes it, and it is a gross looking severed finger, which is like the one thing in this episode that actually does look as bad as they want us to like think that it looks. It is very gross. Yeah.
This is also the one moment of a misdirect that I thought was kind of successful, where like you see the black gloves fiddling with an envelope and you're like, oh, AD tag. And then it turns out to be Marco. I was like, oh, OK, that's like that works.
Well, yeah, I think that in this episode they were really trying to go for, is Marco AD? Like, that was a suspicion that they were trying to raise. And actually, I think I remember like the first time that I watched this episode, like back when the show was on, I was like, oh, are they trying to set up a thing where like Marco is, cause like, you know, you never know, the show lies a lot. I was like, are they gonna like walk it back and like actually Marco is Charles? Like he has this like kind of like unknown, you know, raised by the community center childhood. Like, is that something that's gonna happen? But then they had Spencer make out with him. So I was like, well, who knows? Who knows?
Well, this show isn't above incest. It's proved that. Yeah. Yeah. So that is Hold Your Peace. What are your final thoughts?
I mean, it was better than the previous episode because it wasn't like actively offensive to me. But we have often said that like the worst thing that an episode of PLL can be is boring. And this one just, it had no heart, it had no soul. All it had was that, it had one good line, it had namaste, bitch.
And it had an appendix.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it had the good scene of Hannah. She's like wearing that apron and she's got like the yellow gloves on and everything. Yeah, that was a good visual.
I have to report to you, which makes me very sad. I just looked up, the next episode is Power Play, which is where we find out that Allie is pregnant with the Emily rape babies.
Yeah, yes, it's true. I think we find out, is that when we also find out about Pastor Ted? I think it might be. This is like, we're now entering the era of the show. So like we've been on a hamster wheel for like this whole period of time. And like the show has even kind of lost track of like, what are the liars trying to find out? Are they trying to find Charlotte's killer? Are they trying to cover up Archer's murder? What is the answer in this episode? None of the above. Like, no one cares about anything. So the show has sort of lost that thread, but it almost seems like they maybe like got a lot of complaints about the fact that there were still all these other mysteries that they had to wrap up. I feel like in the next few episodes is like the period of like, I don't know, they just got some direction that was like, okay, this episode needs to tell us who Charlotte's father is. This episode needs to tell us who killed Jessica. This episode needs to like, so we're going to get like a bunch of like revelations that could be interesting, but which are just like boxes that they're trying to check off so that they can say it's done. Yeah. So I feel like we're entering into an era where that's going to happen like 1 million times.
Well, and I also feel like it really has that feel, like you said, of a checked box of like, okay, so there's Pastor Ted. That works as a character. Like, you know, like there's just this sense of scrambling to kind of answer those questions with very little thought put in. I mean, lest we forget that we'll have the gas leak scene at some point.
Right. Oh, yeah. Man. Wow. this is a tough season because every time we get one of these episodes behind us and it's like, oh, great, that one is behind us. And now we're like a little bit close to Avataria and we're like a little bit closer to like these good things that are going to happen. And then it's like, oh, we also have next week, rape babies. And then like next week, oh, the gas leak dream, you know, like, yeah.
Yeah.
Hard times.
We have I Abides though the week after next. So.
We do. And that is exciting because that like, the thing that's wrong with the show right now, I think, is like I said at the beginning, it's just, it doesn't even care about itself anymore. It's not even investing in its own mythology or anything.
Yeah.
They're just really kind of running on fumes and nostalgia. Like Caleb references Hannah hairspraying him. And
yeah.
It reminds you of a time when like these characters were different and we liked them more. But yeah, the I Abides, like Troyan knows what makes the show tick. And that, I think that is probably going to be like a high point of what's left.
Oh, I hope so. I hope so. Yeah. It's like one last high point before we peter out. Yeah. Do we have anything more we want to say about Hold Your Peace?
I've already said more about it than I ever wished to.
Than anybody ever needed to, quite honestly. Yeah. Well, if you have thoughts on Hold Your Peace, we would love to hear from you. You can, of course, send us an email at everybodyapodcast@gmail.com. You can also check out our Instagram at everybodyapodcast. You can check out our Spotify, everybodyapodcast. And you can also send in a rating and review on iTunes. We would appreciate it.
Yeah, I would love to know your thoughts, listeners, on whether men touch tampons, for one.
Yes.
And also where Spencer and Yvonne should go on their honeymoon now that Yvonne has faked her own death.
Ooh, good question. Okay, yeah, we'll think about that. We'll think about that for sure. All right, well, until next time, everybody, make sure you hold your peace, okay?
Take care.
Thank you.